This is the North Peace Roundtable Podcast, your weekly podcast on theology and the Christian life. Well, guys, episode 63.
Here we are.
Thanks for tuning in. I know it's been a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe it's been 2 weeks or so. But if you're listening, thanks for tuning in to the Roundtable Podcast. My name is Andrew. Recording with me, as always, is Corland.
Hello there.
And Cameron.
6 feet away. Good morning.
6 feet. Is social distancing still a thing? I haven't seen that in a long time.
Well, this is not social. This is
professional, and we're like 5¾ feet away from each other, so we're close.
It's like anyways. 6 feet if you squint.
Is that metric?
Safety squint.
Anyway. We're not going to talk about COVID. Episode 63. And if you are new to the podcast, we like to do this roughly once a week and talk about different topics related to theology or the Christian walk. And since we're feeling festive, right? It's the most wonderful time. Yeah. We want to talk about Christmas today. And
did I share that post with you guys about the Grinch? It's like, no wonder the guy's so grumpy. Everyone's singing about how much of a piece of garbage he is.
We drove around looking at Christmas lights last night, and that song came on. And I was listening to the words. I'm like, man, that is brutal.
It's not even a Christmas song.
Your soul is a dump heap of blah, blah. I'm like, wow, man.
That's right.
Three words I would use to describe you. It's like, yeah, no wonder he's in a bad mood. That's constantly playing in your head. So we want to talk about all things Christmas, but specifically, why do we celebrate Christmas when we do? I know there's lots of debate or discussion about, you know, it's a pagan holiday and, you know, where are the origins of where does Christmas come from? And then the question is, you know, should Christians partake and celebrate in all of the Christmassy things, like put a tree in your house, put lights on your house, should you take your kids to go see Santa, blah blah blah, all that kind of stuff. Should we give gifts to one another? Do Christians engage with, you know, for lack of a better term, the worldly aspects of Christianity or of Christmas?
Christianity.
I'm confused.
It's early.
So I don't know. Let's just dive in. Like, why do we celebrate in December? Where did that come from? Where did Christmas start?
It was the literal birthday of Jesus, yeah. Right?
So your party's so lame.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that from The Office? Wow, Mary. Happy birthday, Jesus. Sorry, your party's so lame. That's right. So why do we celebrate now? Do we know for sure the origins of where this came from? Is it good? Is it bad?
I actually don't know the origins of like Christmas as in like December 25th as a holiday. From what I have heard, there was many, many different ethnic groups that celebrated something around the time of like December 21st, so the winter solstice. Mm-hmm. And then as Christianity started taking over the world, they, from what I have heard, my understanding is that Christians knew that they couldn't like tell people, hey, you have to stop celebrating that. Mm-hmm. So they just like adopted some of those traditions, but then kind of like wedged Christ in there so that it could become a quote unquote Christian holiday. Right. So they like adopted all the practices from, because I think it was like it wasn't Norse, but it like the Christmas tree is a different tradition than like the mm-hmm. feasts that we have, and the feasts that we have are a different tradition than all of the other practices that we do, right? But Christians, from what I heard, just kind of adopted it because they knew they couldn't just tell people to stop doing those things and Christianized it. But I don't know, is that accurate? Is that what historians believe? I don't know. Historian Cameron.
So there's a ton of debate around this, and I know lots of times it's kind of said as fact, you know, Christmas is a mm-hmm. pagan holiday, it was this, and it's kind of like, yeah, there's some evidence about that, but there's a lot of mystery around it. Like the first recorded, like this is for sure a historical fact, was in 336 BC. That's the first, like, we know for sure. And Constantine was the first Roman emperor to become a Christian. And there's even debate around that. Was he really, or was he just converting because, you know, more than 50% of the Roman Empire was Christian now, and he was trying to keep you know, people happy. So again, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they say that he was the first Roman emperor who was a Christian. And according to their Roman worship, December 25th is the celebration for their sun god. And so, but even it's funny because depending on which historian you read, I read a historian that said, no, by the time of Constantine, there wasn't actually an official Roman state festival in December. So it's kind of like there's so much muddiness. So, but they people have said, well, the Christians just kind of took over that holiday and saying like, no, it's not about worshiping the sun god. It's about worshiping Jesus now.
It's about worshiping the Son of God.
Oh, mic drop.
Yeah, there's a lot of research you can look into in Roman festival and holidays and how, like you mentioned, feast coming out of Egypt into Rome. And then around 300, when the Roman church decided to keep Christmas and not later until the 5th century when it was kept throughout the empire. And then with the focus on honoring Christ through that process. So,
right.
Pagan is an interesting word that gets tossed around quite a bit. And I shared just before, there's a lot of good work you can read around how early Christian tradition was birthed or formed in spin-offs of festivities or spin-offs of other cultural norms. And so while the language of the day would be that would be pagan, it doesn't inherently mean evil in all cases. There right. are definitely and absolutely some cases where a pagan festival, it would be considered and birthed in an evil, and you wouldn't want to steer clear of that. But
Burning Man.
I'm sure there's countless examples. But from what we can see, this feast, this celebration, and then this focus from the Roman church to focus it on Christ, I think is the foundation of this marrying of holidays that we have now where, of course, you can think of our own home where we honor Christ and we talk the Christmas story and we read the Bible. And the little elves come and play some tricks around the house and, you know, Santa drops a gift, right?
Uh-oh.
Oh, man. Here it goes.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you think about any holiday, because you could go down, and there are Christians who do this, that, and it's like, we're not going to celebrate any aspects of Christmas. It's like, okay. But, like, where does it stop? Because, I mean, Thanksgiving, you look at some of the stuff that's connected to the holiday of Thanksgiving, it's kind of dark. And there's some stuff that you go, wow, okay, that actually happened. Mm-hmm. And yet we sat around a table and we had a big meal and we talked about how thankful we are that God provides for us. And we talked about our year. How is God provide? Yeah. And so was that wrong to celebrate Thanksgiving? No, I don't think so. But everything that we do,
it's absolutely been reclaimed.
Yeah, every holiday that we celebrate, because I'm a follower of Jesus, it always connects to Jesus, right? Like, we went and we celebrated Halloween, right? And so we go, celebrate is a loose word. I don't like do any of the spooky.
They went and got free candy.
But yeah, then we had a great opportunity to talk through some of the scary decorations when my girls were like, did you see that one thing? And we talked about that's like evil exists and blah, blah, blah. And we're not celebrating it. We just want free candy. Any holiday, right? You take even Easter, it's like reverse. Easter has been now paganized on the other way. And it's about a bunny who lays eggs, which makes no sense. It's like, what? That's not even like biologically accurate.
We already have a mammal that does it. It's called
but you know what? On the Easter weekend, we make it very clearly about Jesus, but do we hide a few eggs and the kids go find them? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think you got to be real careful because, and again, if you're listening and you're a family that's like, no, we don't celebrate any aspects. Okay. I don't think you're,
so where do you think that comes from? And just as a side note, I think we missed the mark on Thanksgiving. We'll have to mental note for next year to
do a podcast about Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot how.
Happy Genocide Day.
Oh, we're going to celebrate by coming into your house and saying, we live here now, planting some crop and then being thankful.
Happy Thanksgiving. This is my house now.
Oh, no one's living here? I'm living here.
Oh, God. Anyways, back to Christmas.
But there. And I have been in, I was a kid, but, you know, pastors who would focus on the Old Testament, particularly around Jeremiah and Isaiah, yeah. Where there is...
yeah, I had that. I was going to read that.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Surely he cuts cedar for himself and takes a cypress or an oak and raises it for himself among the trees. This is from Isaiah 44. In the forest he plants a fir and rain makes it grow. Then it becomes something for man to burn. So he takes one of them and warms himself. He also makes a fire. He also makes a god and worships it, makes his own graven image and falls down before it, which is kind of funny. I think of my kids kneeling by the Christmas tree that we went and cut down, and I always burn my Christmas tree, the real ones in the backyard. Reading this morning, I'm like, oh, there could be people that are really concerned for me. But in Jeremiah 10, 2-4, and I don't know what translation this is, NASB, I think. Sorry, guys. Do not learn the way of the nations, and do not be terrified by the signs of the heavens, although the nations are terrified by them, for the customs of the people are delusion, because it is wood cut from the forest, the work of the hands of a craftsman with a cutting tool. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it with nails and hammers so it will not totter. It's like, well, we use string and like pins to the wall. I remember growing up, my dad would like level in the tree. Was always like the freak out before the decorations. And there's been a couple of years where I'm like, let me get it straight before you put anything on there. But I could see how like you can latch onto a couple of these. And
yeah, you read, a tree from the forest is cut down and they decorate it with silver and gold. And you're like, but you got to be really careful because, yeah, speaking of like context is key.
Yeah.
Because because it says it's worked with an axe by the hands of a craftsman. So it doesn't say that they just put a whole tree in their house. They carved it into an idol and then worshipped it. So, I mean, that's such a stretch to be like, sure, that's what you're doing. Now, on one hand, I'm like, it's kind of silly what we do. I don't understand. Why do we cut down a tree? And I don't know if you've ever heard the Jim Gaffigan when he's like, sounds like the behavior of a drunk person. I'm going to cut this tree down and put it in my living room, and I'm going to take these lights and put them outside.
That's true.
So, but to say that, like, that's Jeremiah 10, that's a Christmas tree, I'm like, it's so not. It's such a stretch to say that. So, yeah. Sorry to jump way back, because there's even church tradition that would say otherwise, that it's not connected to the Roman holiday, which I find really interesting. They have one record that goes back to 200, so 150 years before Constantine, that showed early Christians celebrating in December. So it's kind of like, okay, is that for sure? I don't know. Some have said that some church tradition says that Mary was told that she'd have a baby, like the angel came to her on March 25th. And again, there's no for sure.
Yeah.
But then people have said, well, 9 months later is December 25th. So maybe that is the birth of Jesus. We don't know for sure. Others have said, no, the birth of Jesus is probably in the spring sometime because, you know, it would be too cold for shepherds to have their flocks out. And so they did and blah, blah, blah. So a lot of it is speculation going, we don't know for sure when Jesus was born. Yeah. And yet here's some, you know, church traditions that rose up even in the Eastern church. So, you know, in the Eastern parts of Europe, they actually don't celebrate December 25th. It's January 6th. That's the day they've picked to celebrate Christmas. It's kind of like, okay.
Christmas as the birth of Jesus or Christmas as like we celebrated?
As like, this is the birth of Jesus. They've said January.
Yeah, I think the Russian calendar is the 10th or 12th of January.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, who's right and who's wrong? It doesn't really matter, right? Like,
I think the safest bet would be to explore the history around the census and try to find.
Yeah, that could be
the date of the census, just keeping a narrative, and still you're going to be off by a week or two because you don't know what travel plans look like.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that might be the closest cultural marker to the birth of Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. So then, like, what do you guys think? I already know Cam's opinion because he's already said his kids worship the tree or whatever. But like, as followers of Jesus, do we engage with all of these kind of
pagan things?
Pagan in terms of it's not Christian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
But yeah, so do you put a tree in your house? Do you take your kids to go see Santa? Or reasons why you shouldn't do that? I don't know. Like,
I don't have kids yet, so I'm not going to answer first.
Your answer.
So yeah, growing up, our focus was never like Santa and presents and be good. But I actually can't remember as a kid ever going. No, that's not true. I can remember. There was a year where it was back in the day with like the mall Santa. Oh, yeah. When you actually go to the big mall. So I remember in Ottawa, we drove to the big mall and you wait in line and then you go and sit and you take a picture. But
without hand sanitizer.
Without hand sanitizer. He didn't wear a mask even. Like, gosh, simpler time. But yeah, our family, we knew that the focus of Christmas, we're celebrating Jesus, that he would come. He came to save us. But we still got a tree. We still gave each other presents.
Yeah.
And for me, there was no, growing up, there was no confusion of like, what's this holiday about? Right. It was just kind of like, well, yeah, it's Jesus was born. And we do these things. Like, and I think my parents did a good job. Like, we give presents. And I remember a few years, my dad would be like, you know, the reason that we're giving presents to one another is because God gave us this great present and we love each other and we want to show each other. It was just kind of like, oh, okay.
Wow, that sounds exactly like what my parents told me. Yeah. Almost that exact speech.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think we obviously saw the mall Santa.
Yeah.
Didn't get to go very often because it was expensive and my dad was more like, yeah, right. but we were, yeah, I don't recall any gifts from Santa under the tree, but
because my dad was like, I'm getting credit for this.
Well, I say that to my wife. So we have in the past done like, oh, look, Santa brought you both one little, you know, coloring house or something fun like that.
Yeah.
So in our house, yeah, we joke about Santa and I find it innocent ignorance, like for the kids, like sure. Natalia is 8, and she kind of said the other day, like, aren't you guys just Santa's elves? We're like, yeah, exactly. Like, there's presents under the tree right now, so there's no myth about, like, oh, that night he's coming in.
Yeah.
But Sasha is 5, and he's like, oh, this is an electric fireplace. There's no chimney. How's Santa getting in? I'm like, Christmas magic, man. He'll open a door. Like, and he's like, okay.
It's the only time we're allowed. Mouth, okay?
You're ruining this for me.
It's the only time someone's allowed to break and enter, and it's fine.
That's right. But, you know, but at the same breath, he'll say, there's no Easter without Christmas, right? Because of the Bible that we read all the time. And I find it really neat. And I know that in the coming year or two, some little jerks at school will ruin it for them. But they won't be crushed because it'll be, at a time where they're able to know that, well, Santa's still going to drive by in the parade. I'm still going to wave at him. They'll probably start writing letters. They did write a letter to Santa, and I was looking over their shoulder to be sure that I captured some of their thoughts. But yesterday, the letter came back in the mail. You know, so on the table right now at our house with their two little stinking elves is the letter from Santa. So really, I think, innocent fun, you know, and every night we read the Bible. And so that is the focus, and there's just things that add to it. I think the biggest pushback on Christmas for Christians, and one that should be really thought through, is the whole commercialization and materialistic, consumeristic element of that, which I fall into too. I think I saw you in Canadian Tire one day, and I'm like, man, I don't make good decisions around Christmas, right? Because
so true.
Because
everything is so bright and shiny. Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's for me personally. Like, Tatiana hates it because I don't ask for anything. I don't really like want gifts. Yeah. I really love giving people stuff.
Yeah.
And like just last night, I had to run to the store for something, and I bought something for Tatiana and stuck in her stocking. I told her, and she's like, stop wasting money on me. I'm like, it's not a waste. Like,
yeah.
Cause I like that, but it's a trap because I think people could put themselves into debt. I think people could, you know, really have stress and anxiety about not being able to give in that way. I spoke with a person on Sunday who was troubled at the thought of not being able to give something on that day, and so that's a problem also in the church.
Yeah, that's a really good point to not get. I mean, for me, what I'm most looking forward to, I'm the same as you. My wife every year, it drives her crazy. Like, what do you want for Christmas? I'm like, I'm almost out of socks. Like, my socks have holes in them. And she's like, no, that's a need. What do you want? And even her Molly's family is very much like, her mom, her dad, and her one sister giving gifts is like, that's my love language. And they always say, like, it can't be something you need. Like, what's just something fun you want? I'm like, I honestly do not know. I I don't think like that, right? So
a night out with the guys and all. Yeah.
You want to be away.
Six pack of beer. How about that?
You want to be away from us.
How about a promise that you won't call me for 6 months? I'm just kidding, oh. Molly. If you're listening, I love your family. but I know it can. Yeah. If people get sucked into like the, you know, I need to. Each of my kids needs like 12 presents and blah blah blah. And it's just kind of like what I'm most looking forward to is having that week off between Christmas and New Year's, spending time with my family. I like the food of Christmas, like eating. Oh, yeah. All that kind of stuff is great, right? But you're right. The commercial, like, you must buy these things in order to celebrate Christmas. This is kind of like, don't get sucked into that, I guess. But yeah, for us, like, our girls, I think our girls are aware that Santa is just fun make-believe because it's funny, like, they've noticed, like, why does Santa look different every time we go to a dip? And then Molly's parents, for their job at Winter, they play Santa and Mrs. Claus. So they're kind of like, wait, Papa's not the real Santa, though. So they've just kind of already figured it out. And it's just kind of like, well, yeah, it's just fun. Like, right. You know, and Molly wrapped one present from Santa.
Already?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, we're done. We're done all our... Oh, no, she hasn't put it under the tree
yet. Okay, I'm going to
Yeah. But she showed me last night, like, look, this is the one from Santa. And
is it different paper than the others?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so we just, it's just fun, right? Even, like, we do the tooth fairy thing, but even Lucy, like, the other, was it Ruby's last tooth? She's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's you guys. I'm like, have you ever seen me in there? Well, no. I'm like.
Did I tell you the story of my mother-in-law?
No.
So the kid loses a tooth. I don't remember which one. It was maybe a year or two ago. My mother-in-law is Russian, has a concept of Canadian currency, but not like a spot-on concept.
Oh, gosh.
Drops a 20 under the pillow. No. Tanya and I go to bed. I think one of the kids, it must have been Natalia, walks out with a $20 bill from the tooth fairy.
Inflation.
I'm like, inflation. Yeah, I'm holding my head. I'm like, my goodness. And so...
Yeah, wait till the molars fall. That's like 50.
I think I spun it real quick. I'm like, man, the tooth fairy's got you covered for the next few, right? Yeah, she paid ahead. That's great. Yeah.
So I think, like, bottom line is I don't think it's wrong to enjoy aspects of different holidays.
No.
But again, for me, as I was thinking on the way here, I was like, but if your conviction and your conscience is like, no, you know, we're not going to focus on that. It's like, okay, that fine. Like, I don't think you're any less or better of a Christian. It's just kind of like, that's where you land. We've shared before growing up, we just did not celebrate any aspects of Halloween. And it's kind of like, okay, that's my parents' conviction.
Yeah.
And we went trick-or-treating this year with our kids. And it's kind of like, who's right or wrong? I don't know if it is a right or wrong topic.
Yeah, because I think for me the sticky part there is not like what Cameron said. If it's innocent fun, awesome. But if you're like, at least in my conscience, lying to my kids that Santa's real or that he's giving them gifts is like, I don't know if I could do that.
Wait till the kid comes in. You gotta, oh man, we should do a segment on lying to kids.
Let him finish. What were you going to say?
I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, it is an avoidable thing. It's not like one of those things where, I don't want to say a white lie because lying is never good with quotation marks around it, right? But like, if you're not protecting something, like all you're doing is just telling a kid just a straight up lie. To me, that's like, well, why? Like, if they're going to figure it out eventually anyways, like I remember walking through the mall and seeing Santa in the mall. And I remember kind of just, it was wrong of me to do this, but I remember having this like,
were you the kid that screamed, he's not real?
No, but I remember walking by thinking to myself, this is ridiculous. Like, he's not even real. Like,
how old were you?
Oh, we should have put a spoiler alert on the podcast at the beginning.
Oh yeah. Don't listen. Hey kids, listen, don't worry.
But I do remember kids would come to school and Santa got me this. It's like, you're delusional. Like
he was that kid.
I was. Yeah. I didn't ever say it to them because I think my parents. I most
was
definitely wasn't. But I know that my parents were like, no, you got to respect people, obviously. So yeah. I didn't go and I wasn't rude to them. But I do remember just thinking, like, it's ridiculous. Like,
sure,
Santa got the kid that was a worse kid than that one an iPad, a dirt bike, and a quad, and Buddy over here got a pair of socks. The guy with the dirt bike's a jerk. Like, there's no way the naughty or nice list even is a thing. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and we don't focus on that. I always joke with Molly when she ever talks about Santa. I'm like, this works righteousness. She's like, stop it. You're ruining Christmas. But we don't say, like, kids, if you're not good this month, Santa. We're like, no.
No, it'd be a lot cheaper that way, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. You know what we did, though? It was my idea the other night. I took all the candy canes off the tree, and there was two elves because there's two kids. So one elf was sitting on the table with this cheeky note under it says, saying, be kind or you'll never see your candy canes again. And the other elf was on top of the highest like cupboard, and it had all the candy canes in its arms, just like peeking over the. And then it was funny. The next couple of days, the day before yesterday, the elves were back on the tree with two candy canes, and Sasha's like, hey, if we be good, they're going to bring them all back. And I'm like, yeah.
Yes.
Obedience went up 40%.
That's right. Oh, man.
That's funny.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I think...
I'm not lying to them. The elves are.
Yeah, that's not me. It's, but even it's funny, like, so much, you know, when there was this big uproar of Christians being like, don't say happy holidays. Keep Christ and Christmas. Oh, for man. Me, I'm like, that is so silly. If someone says happy holidays to me, I'm like, yep, same to you.
Yeah, because I'm not a jerk.
Well, yeah.
I'm a Christian,
and,
but and I'm not
again,
a jerk.
Like, you can celebrate things and not... I remember there... Do you remember when Starbucks changed the cups?
I don't.
And there were actually Christians upset because it was like, you're taking Christ out of Christmas. I'm like, for goodness sake, it's a cup. It's a cardboard cup. So I think, yeah, to just, if you have really strong convictions, you don't have to be. Yeah.
But it's funny that those with the strongest convictions are the most threatened by this nonsensical holiday. That's quite interesting. Like, if you really believe it has nothing to do, then you should have no issue with what that other pagan tradition is doing.
Sure.
You should completely ignore it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I'm not going to celebrate any aspects of this pagan holiday, but if you say happy holidays to me, keep Christ and Christmas. It's like, what do you want?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think it's, again, it boils down to personal conviction and conscience. But yeah, you know, don't read Jeremiah 10 and say, it's idolatry to put a Christmas tree in my house. It's not. Unless you literally are worshiping your tree.
Then we need to talk.
But the sin of Christmas, the one easy to fall into, the most, the one you should avoid the most is the consumerist mentality and commercialization of this season.
Yeah, totally. So there we go. We fixed Christmas.
And the other sin of Christmas is that I've not found a dark skinned nativity scene yet. That's pretty troubling. That's a conversation for another day. Mm. But Caucasian blue-eyed nativity scenes.
Wasn't he white?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Wasn't Jesus?
Just ask Trudeau for his face paint, and you can just paint the characters.
Oh, gosh. This is going off the rails. Yeah.
That was a joke.
We have a ton of Trudeau fans that listen to the podcast. So anyways, hopefully that was helpful. And we are going to have play a little segment here of...
The Podcast Cast React.
So we are going to react to a clip. Now, to be fair, I actually haven't pre-listened to this clip.
Oh, boy.
So this could go one of two ways. It could be like really good and insightful.
Doubt it.
Or it could be horrible. I'm going to guess horrible because it's from Bill Johnson. So this little clip, I don't know if we'll listen to the whole thing. It's 6 minutes.
Whew.
But it's called You Have Authority. And so if you're new to the podcast, what we do is we'll listen to a sermon clip, and we might pause it periodically. But what we want to do is react to it in a way that kind of breaks down, okay, is this actually true or is this false teaching? And then give some reasons why. So here we go. This is just the
On the same day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us cross over to the other side." Now, when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was great calm. But he said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" Well-meaning people get into religious ruts. Religious ruts where we forget to think about, to dwell on, to meditate, to discover how the kingdom of God actually works. And this hits one of them right square in the head. Who is Jesus? This isn't a trick question. You're looking at me like, you don't know? There'll be no trick questions today, all right? I'm going to be nice all day long. Who is Jesus? He's God. What do we call conversation with God? Prayer. So the disciples pray. Jesus gets up. He answers their prayer and then turns to them and says, "Why don't you have any faith?"
Oh, okay. So that's super interesting.
Is he equating Jesus' disciples literally talking to Jesus as prayer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because if you know some of Bethel's theology, I already know where he's going. But it's interesting to frame it like that. Like, okay, so Jesus is God. When we talk to God, what's that called? Prayer. Prayer. Okay, so when Jesus or when his disciples talked to him, they were praying. And that was going to get into like the faith and the storms in your life, I think. So super interesting.
Now, I grew up thinking the answers to prayer were the evidences of faith. Now, I wouldn't want to say answers to prayer are not valuable, but the kingdom awareness, the kingdom mind, the renewed mind lives with an awareness that sometimes God wants to do something through you and not for you.
Come on.
The renewed mind lives with an awareness that sometimes God wants to do something through you and not for you.
Okay, yep.
This is the renewed mind. What did Jesus do in this situation? Well, first of all, he slept during a storm. I hope you don't get tired of the statement, but we've said it countless times through the years. You only have authority over the storm you can sleep in.
What? What?
In other words,
okay, so I'm sorry. That is like such a... That's not...
Does he have that painted on his like living room wall?
That's a new one.
So wait, so if I can't sleep because I'm worried about my wife's health, that means that I can't have authority
over
it. You
have no authority over it.
That is just hogwash. That doesn't make any sense. But it's such a... You know, you hear that like, oh yeah, Jesus slept through the storm and then he had authority over it. So if I can sleep through my...
You're right. His sleeping in the storm is what gave him authority over the storm, yeah. Not the
kids
fact
in the
that
hospital,
he was gone.
I'm
going to
grab a few wings.
Oh, gosh.
Place where you have peace is where you have authority to bring peace.
So when... Okay.
What did Jesus do in this situation? It says he rebuked the wind and the waves, and he spoke or released peace over the storm, and the chaos outside of him had to submit to the peace that was inside of him.
No, the
I thought you just
so
said it was the authority.
Internal,
No. It's not that Jesus had peace within him so that the winds had to submit to that peace. Jesus is God, and the weather obeys him.
Have you ever had your dog mad at you, and you're just like... peace be with you, and they just stopped? No, because that doesn't work that way. Your inner peace does not affect the surroundings.
It's interesting, because then it's not that Jesus just has authority because he's God. Right. No, he has authority because he has peace. And now it's going
to
be,
and you need to have peace.
Just wait. I'm waiting for the turnaround.
The world that was in him, remember Jesus taught this, the kingdom is within you. Which to me means all kingdom issues are heart issues. And when heart issues are dealt with, the world around you has to yield itself to your personal internal victory.
No, it doesn't.
So, what do we have in this story? We have number one, the renewed mind lives with an awareness that sometimes God wants to do something through you and not for you. The renewed mind lives with an awareness that your internal victories become your external victories. We put it a different way. The world around you, when you know what you're doing, when you know how to utilize the tools that God gives you, the world around you starts to take the shape of the world that is in you. Yeah. Now, you and I know this instinctively. Whether you've thought through it or not is another matter. But we know this instinctively. We've had people, maybe we've walked into a room, we felt incredible tension in a room, or maybe fear. Maybe we've talked to a friend and they're smiling on the outside. Everything looks fine on the outside, but we can feel the fear or the hatred or the bitterness or whatever it is that's going on inside of them. You can feel it because they're leaking. That internal reality is starting to shape. And how many of you have seen this before? Somebody becomes hostile and bitter, and they may not say it, but they walk into a room and people around them start getting hostile and irritated and angry. Why? Because that thing that is in them is starting to define the world around them. Now, what the Lord has done is He has instructed us, deal with what's going on the inside. Why? It will position you to redefine the nature of the world around you. All right? One last point.
Oh, he's getting really slippery into like the positive psychology and the just natural base. Like, so, okay, it's no mystery if I walk into a room, or sometimes I've gone home and the kids are just being awful, and yeah, it does change the outset of my mood slightly. I get a little irritated, get annoyed, we straighten it out. But to equate that then to like now, I don't know, it's slippery. Like, because he started with the fact that the disciples were in a boat being tossed by the waves and you know, to go to Jesus, and then he just drifted off into a whole nother subject matter, I think, because what's so significant or super spiritual about the fact that your attitude can change a room? Like, well, nothing.
Yeah.
But being tossed in a storm like that, I actually read that story and read it as though Jesus was saying, guys, why didn't you just come to me and wake me up and ask me to calm the storm? Mm-hmm. Why were you fearing for your life out there?
Yeah.
Not, you guys should have stopped the storm.
Yeah.
You don't have that authority. No. But I do. You should have come to me and said, Jesus, got a little issue here.
Yeah.
Jesus... That would be the process of prayer, not sitting there not praying, fearing for your life.
Sure.
That's how I read the story, but he read it as,
well, it's,
they should have not even gone to Jesus. They could have had internally within them, had they had the peace and the knowledge and the authority, they could have calmed the storm and not awoken Jesus.
Yeah.
It's essentially what he's saying.
And when you know Bethel's theology, which is prosperity and word of faith, then
little g gods.
Well, yeah, because then the idea of like, well, my internal then defines my external. Then if I just have, it's that whole, if you just think positive, then positive things come to you and you define your reality based. It's just.
By using that story, he's saying you didn't need to go and wake up Jesus.
Yeah, sure.
You didn't just need to go into the boat. You could have handled it without Jesus because of what
had
Jesus
had. Had you been good enough?
Yeah, okay. There's only, I just want
to. Before we move on.
Maybe he'll redeem himself.
Doubt it.
Notice that Jesus rebuked the storm. The very fact that he rebuked the storm, to me, implies there was a demonic force in the storm. The church frequently
just like
gives God
tree.
Credit for disaster, saying, well, that was the hand of God bringing judgment or discipline or whatever to people. No, Jesus rebuked it because there was a power in the storm that was not of God. So the renewed mind then looks at obstacles, not believing it's the hand of the Lord. Here's the problem. When you see disaster, calamity, crisis started by God, when you believe that in your heart of hearts, when you think that way, then you lose your ability to discern what is actually demonic and what is actually from the Lord. Because you've put the devil's work into the category of God's work.
Well, that's getting a little messy.
Oh, man alive. Well, okay.
I looked at my screen and I lost him there. You're putting the...
I just wanted to... Because there's a verse that came to mind as he was like, you know...
You're not supposed to look at Bible verses while you're listening.
Yes, but...
don't check what
he's
saying.
The idea that like... You know, when you look at calamity or you look at tragedy or you look at storms or floods, da, 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 and to attribute that to God, you're giving, that's Satan's work. But Isaiah 45:7, this is God speaking. I form light and create darkness. I make well-being and create calamity. I am the Lord who does all these things. Now, does that make it some tension to sort through that? Well, yeah.
Sure.
But to say when calamity comes, if you attribute that to the Lord, that's Satan's work. I'm banging my Bible if you can't hear that. God says, I'm the one who creates calamity.
I often, if I'm being facetious, I'll say, have you read Exodus? Have you read about plagues? Do you remember that story? Yeah.
Book of Job, even.
That wasn't Satan sending plagues. Now, is the world sinful and thus naturally there are disasters?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't actually think that it's Satan in that moment. And this is the kind of theology that actually makes Satan omnipresent and all-knowing.
Uh-huh.
It's the theology and the language that said Satan is everywhere at every time. Like, yeah. That's actually damaging language, and I don't believe it to be true.
Yeah.
But it's almost, and I've said it before, the prayers that are a three-way conference call with Satan and Jesus.
Like, yeah, sure.
Where they switch interchangeably in addressing. That's damaging theology, because I've not seen where Satan can hear my thoughts, hear my voice. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
And here's what the huge problem is. Then everyone listening to that leaves going, okay, if I can just get my heart in the right place, then all my external circumstances will change because I have authority now. And then they go home and it doesn't happen because it's not reality. Right. And then they think, rather than I'm gonna be on my knees asking God for help, then they leave going,
I just need to find my inner peace.
I thought I had peace and yet I still lost my job. Oh man. So what he's actually doing is just placing burdens on people to perform in order to, like, rather than saying, hey, listen, Jesus wants you to cry out to him in any storm in life and believe that he can help you in mm-hmm. that. No, it's like, oh, it didn't fix it. Well, your inward reality is not, you're not claiming the authority you have. And it's just,
I find it interesting how that thought pattern makes it rest totally on the person to mm. have inner peace. And yet he provides an out so that if something happens, blame demonic activity.
Instantly,
it's like, it's all on you to make sure you control your surroundings. Don't worry about Jesus' help. Just worry about making sure you're right inside.
Yeah.
But if that doesn't work, it's a demon.
Yeah.
So like it sounds wild, but yeah, the person that lost their job, that, oh man, my inner peace wasn't right. It was obviously a demonic attack. No,
your
attack.
Punctuality wasn't right.
Yeah. But even it was subtle, but even, you know, at the beginning he said, who is Jesus? Jesus is God. But then to explain how Jesus did miracles, it's not that he was God, it's because he had peace.
Yeah. But isn't, so, their theology is that Jesus was a perfect human.
Well, they always backpedal. Anytime someone's like, wait, are you saying that Jesus? No. Jesus was fully God. But then they'll say things like, well, Jesus only did miracles as a man in right relationship with God. That's their tagline. So they would say, Jesus is fully God, but he never did a miracle as God. And it's just kind of like, logically, that makes absolutely, was he fully God? Well, yeah, he's fully God. So then he can't do miracles as God? No, only as a man. Well, then he's not God.
Your sins have been forgiven.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. So anyways,
that's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. The reason we do that is because I know lots of people who listen to that kind of stuff and it's just, it sounds so smart and it sounds so profound and deep that they just go, well, it must be true. Look, it's just, and then it doesn't help when you have people going, wow, that's amazing.
Do you think those, like, are paid actors in there sometimes?
I don't know. So anyways, to think critically and go, okay, wait a second, break down what he's actually saying and then go to the word and go, wait, this doesn't make any sense. So that's why we do these kind of clips, not to pick on people, but the hard part is I know lots of people in our congregation that just listen to stuff like this and go, well, yeah, what's wrong with it? Well, think critically, right? Mm-hmm. So this has been episode 63. Hopefully it's been a useful episode for you. Happy birthday, Cameron, tomorrow, everyone. And Corlin is today.
Tomorrow.
You guys have the same birthday?
Yeah, we have the same birthday.
Not the same year, though. I knew your birthday was this week. I forgot that it was Thursday. Well, yeah, happy birthday, you guys. And if you want to send presents to them, feel free to do that. Just buy into the commercialism of birthdays. Anyways, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.